Hey, folks. Welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. And we're here to talk some Cubs baseball, mates. Ha, 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 ha. That's as far as I'll go with any Brit-related connective tissue. Otherwise, we will be talking about the London series, of course. And I was glad that I did get to bust out a bangers and mash line for the first game. Because there were, you know, multiple home runs. Ian Happ, two home runs. Dansby Swanson hit a home run. Blowout game, even without Matt Mervis involved. See, everyone was setting that up, that he was going to be around. They're looking ahead on the calendar. All of us sort of lame, punny type people were like, oh, yeah, bangers and mash. I just need a couple people to hit home runs and Matt Mervis to have a good game, and it's all set up. But I made it work. I made it work. That's what heroes do. So that was the first game. And then the second game, you know, for about 15 minutes, it was like, oh, hell yes. The Cubs are going to blow these Joker Cardinals out right out of England. And they looked defeated. They looked just completely like their season was even further in the toilet. And boy, did it feel good. And then Trey Mancini dropped a ball. And sunk the Cubs season from there. That one play, we're going to look back. No, I kid.
Oh, dear.
I kid.
Uh-oh.
However, now, and stay with me, and we're going to talk about this, and I'm not going to carry all this myself, but I do think that play, of course, for those who are unaware, Cubs were up 4-0 at the time. Marcus Stroman had gotten into some trouble, and then he got a bouncer to second base that was going to get him out of the inning. It was a very easy play for Nico Hoerner. It was a routine ground ball to the second baseman. There was no question about whether that was even remotely an appropriate ball for a first baseman to make a first or second or third step to try to make. But Trey Mancini, who was playing first base, on a day when, I will note, Cody Bellinger was available to play, it turns out. But Trey Mancini got the start because there was a lefty on the mound to start the game, and you absolutely have to start Trey Mancini at first base when there is a lefty on the mound. You have to. It's in the Bible. And so Trey Mancini takes two or three steps the wrong way, realizes, oh, shit, that's Nico's ball, tries to make his way back to first, turns the wrong way, can't find the ball, reaches up with his bare hand for some reason to try to catch the ball, and then the coup de grace, of course, is that he can't actually catch it with his bare hand, drops the ball, runs score, the inning continues. Another hit later, two more runs are in. The Cardinals are right back in the game, and they ultimately go on to win the game by two runs. It was a three-run mistake in a two-run game. Now, I'm going to punctuate this with two things. One, that was the maddest I have been about an individual defensive play in a Cubs game in years, which I've had a lot of those in the last like month, where it was like the most X in a number of years. And I will tell you, now that I'm clear of it by a day, it actually is sort of it's almost a heartening thing, because I don't get that pissed off about an individual defensive play unless I feel really emotionally connected to the outcome of the game. Like, it matters. Like, this game really matters. And that's a good sign. I can step back enough to say that's a good sign for where things are right now with the Cubs. It was no comfort in the moment. And then the second thing I'm going to say is, once again, further removed from the moment, my anger and blame really doesn't lie that much with Trey Mancini. Not the least of which because he had some very thoughtful things to say after the game, where he does feel like the weight of that game fell on him, which, gosh, I just hate when guys, I don't want him to feel that way. It might be true, but I don't want him to feel that way. I blame the Cubs at large for being in a situation where they feel like, no, he's the guy who has to play first base in these games, when it has been crystal clear. I don't know, was it the last podcast or whatever that we talked about, that he can't play first base anymore? You cannot permit him to be playing first base. And it's not hindsight. And he screwed up in the first inning too, by the way, his non-stretch for the Dansby Swanson throw. What the hell was that? It was like he was a hockey goalie trying to block a regular throw. It's been apparent for a month that he cannot play first base. There is no way he is the second best option when Cody Bellinger's not available to play first base. And if he is, that means you screwed up as an organization not making some kind of other plans over the past month, where you felt backed into a corner that you've got to play a guy who, with all love and respect for the wonderful story that he is, the offense that he can provide, he cannot play first base. He rates as the worst defensive first baseman in baseball, no matter the innings limit, and he's barely played there. That's how bad he's been. All right, I'm good.
I mean, it's a little jarring because he was never this bad at first base.
This is not,
and he was just like statistically.
In. Sorry, yeah. I'm not. I'm clearly not done. I just want to add. This isn't blaming the Cubs for bringing him in the first place because there wasn't an indication in the off. There was no reason to expect it was going to look like this, but it does.
Yeah, and you know what? When you watch it, it's not like, at least, especially yesterday, these aren't just like those types of errors where you're like, ah, bad hop, or, oh, geez, like that was a tough one. That just like was hit on a line and skipped on him, whatever. These are plays that he should be making and that we wouldn't notice at all if he were making.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, look at that play.
Yeah, and that's just, there's something, it seems really odd to me why it's happening, how it's happening, that it's happening so often makes me wonder how his defense has degraded so quickly. And then his reaction was, obviously it hit you, Brett, because you wrote a whole post about it. And I mean, if you spend one moment talking to this guy, I know fans don't get to talk to all these players, but you spend one moment, you interview him once, and you're like, good guy. Obviously, it's not hard to figure out. You know his background and everything, and that just confirms everything. So it's really hard to rip this guy apart. But these are mistakes he can't be making, and it's a position that you don't want to notice. I feel like defensive first base almost should be like offensive lineman. You don't really notice it. You shouldn't notice it. It should just be there. The keen eye will appreciate it, but for the most part, as long as you don't notice the first baseman defensively, all is well. I don't know what's going on there. I do think the bat is still valuable. His running is like non-existent now. I noticed it about a month or two ago when he tried to, I'm not sure if he tried to stretch. Yeah. He tried to stretch a single into a double and it should have been a double.
It was off the
wall.
Yeah.
And I remember watching him round first and I was like, oh no, what's happening? Did he pull something? It's like, oh no, that's him at full speed. Oh dear. So I'm not sure what's going on. If this is just a rapid decline physically, but he's still hitting, right?
He still has bat speed. He's still, yeah.
Yeah. So there's something weird going on defensively. I'd like to talk to him about it to have a better idea. It sucks that it's happening to such a good guy. And frankly, it sucks that it happened in that moment because I think I said it before, on Thursday or whatever day we recorded that winning these two games would have been really nice. I just think coming back home, that flight home, feeling good about being at 500, coming to a home crowd, some bigger games against the Phillies. The Phillies and Cleveland, I think, have both been playing well of late. Philly for sure. And it just would have felt differently. It still can be fine. I don't think it's disastrous, but just all the little things, all the immeasurable aspects of it, I think would have been really on the upswing there, and you would have felt great about the Cubs coming back to town, 500 team, red hot. You know what? They would have been 12-2 in their last 14, and the Reds would have been 12-2 in their last 14. All this love for the Reds, you could have just thrown it to the wayside because they're the same thing as the Cubs in the last 14 games. None of it would have mattered, right? It just, mentally, feels a little different now. And like you said, Brett, you don't want to put it on one person, but that was a pretty big error and a pretty big, maybe not the biggest moment, but it turned out to be a pretty big moment in that game. You can make plenty of arguments. The Cubs should have tacked on more runs. They scored one more run in the final eight innings. You can point fingers elsewhere, but I think that hurts that Mancini made that mistake in that moment.
You absolutely have to win that game. You have a 4-0 lead with your best pitcher on the mound against a last place team that's already undermanned. Like, this is one of those games we can put it up next to that loss in Houston. Pick any of those losses in Washington. I don't know if there was a favorite failure with runners in scoring position during that Miami series, but like
it was on the catalog. It was the one that went like 13 innings and they had six chances to walk it off. Yes.
So we can put that together for the Cubs convention highlight reel next year. But yeah, like Saad have said, Brett, I thought it was interesting and appropriate that you picked up on Trey Mancini's demeanor after that game. I think that's why the Cubs have given him a lot of rope here, a lot of latitude, and a lot of just respect for his game, what he's accomplished, how he handles himself. I think back to another Cubs Cardinal moment a couple years ago when Albert Almora could not make a play during a Yu Darvish, like, almost no-hitter type of game, and that really sunk the Cubs' playoff hopes, like, officially. And I had someone around the team who was just like, what was with Almora's reaction post-game? Not that we judge people on how they talk to the media, but he was just slumped in his chair, just like, I couldn't catch it, and really did not offer much insight at all. And not that you're asking these players to, you know, break down, but there was just, it just felt like his reaction was not appropriate to the gravity of that moment. And I do think when a player like Mancini does that, I think people notice in a good way, and that hopefully the Cubs just take that off of his plate, that he's just not playing first base anymore, can find him, you know, a more situational role, because everyone liked the signing at the time. There's not like one person in baseball who's going to say a bad word about Trey Mancini. And, you know, the rest of this season is about which buttons they're going to push. And it's kind of with, you know, the group they have on hand here for the next month of, okay, the runway with certain players is pretty much gone. I mean, you saw, obviously, Patrick Wisdom was hurt, but he was being phased out. Mancini's role has been reduced. You have players like younger guys like Miguel Amaya and Christopher Morel moving closer towards center stage, and you know they basically got a month here to prove it, see what they got.
You know, I think you make a good point too, that for as weighty and negative as a moment like that can be, and how a guy handles it, and maybe more importantly, how his teammates handle it, I don't want to maybe go so far as to say it can be like this galvanizing thing, but there are certainly two ways that that could have played out post-game in the clubhouse, behind the scenes, on the flight home. It could be a lot of guys being quiet and in their head thinking, why the fuck was he playing first base? How did he make that mistake? How did we lose that game because of that? Now what's going to happen? Stroh has a blister. Like, this is a disaster. We had a moment. All these kinds of things. Or it can be, you know, man, we love this guy so much, and he is sitting there wearing the entire weight of this loss, and we could have scored more. Stroh could have made more pitches earlier on to not allow so many hits thereafter, which did happen. Any number of things could have happened. We could have won that game. We're going to win the next game. We're going to pick this guy up. We're going to make sure that he doesn't have to wear this for too long, because we're going to win so many more games that it doesn't matter. That's how a lot of athletes think, you know? And we, as outsiders, can look back at the games that Mooney was listing as like, oh, shit, that's a bad loss, that's a bad loss. You don't want the players to be hanging on that stuff. You don't want them to remember. You want them to think they always have a chance to turn it around, and that those wins and losses won't matter. Anything that came before won't matter. And the kinds of groups that you would expect to have a chance to do that, well, one, they would have to be, you know, extraordinarily talented. And I do think this is a very talented team. I do. I think it's a more talented than average team. I genuinely now believe that. Yeah, I do. We could put a pin in that and come back to that if you want. I actually do, now that we have a half season, I do think, not much, if we were doing the collective, you know, plus statistic on talent, you know, WT plus, I think they might be like a 101, 101, 102.
Is this the will to win? What are you talking about? The will to win?
Well, now Hockaroo? We can circle back and I could button it there, because I do think that is a bit of what I'm talking about, is that you want a group of guys who care about each other so much that they're not going to let this derail Mancini's season, for example, whatever his role is. We know he's a very introspective guy. We know he's a guy who, I think, he interviewed with Sahadev earlier this year, where he does think deeply about his own performance and get in his head a bit. And, you know, nobody wants to see that happen for him or any other player. And I do think there is just a little extra something at the margins of a baseball season with 162 games, where if guys really do genuinely care about the success of each other, I think there's little bits that they can give each other throughout a season that's going to make a difference. And so, you know, again, that's not to turn a bad loss and a bad moment into a positive, because it's not. That was, for all the reasons we've said, that was a bad loss in the moment, and it's a bad loss when you sort of zoom out. But I think they can at least not let it be a thing that carries over any further than the hour after the game. Like, I don't think they have to carry that home on the plane with them. I don't think they have to carry it with them into the game against the Phillies. I think there's an opportunity to turn that into a, hey, shitty thing happened, but we got you, man, and we're gonna move forward from there. And like, then, like Mooney said, now it's up to the organization to make sure he's not in that position again.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I do look at this team, and I have felt since spring that this team, if it had anything, it's a good group of players who, you know, the intangible aspects seem to be strong. So just this latest run, I think, is kind of an example of that, in the sense that they didn't let people hang their heads for too long. They kind of, I mean, Patrick talked about it before, the kind of, let's get this together in San Francisco. They kind of figured things out and wouldn't let that, what was it, a terrible month and a half stretch of play really linger much longer. And they've gotten back to they're relevant slightly to us again.
In the division, my point last time.
Yeah. In this division, more needs to be done. I think they need to stay hot. But I think this is kind of that moment where you can't let it sink you. You can't let one bad play, one bad game, determine that, okay, all we did before that, the nice 11-2 stretch they had before that, isn't irrelevant because of that one bad game. I think they need to remember that. And I do believe they have the right players to kind of push those buttons. I think Dansby Swanson is, the more I kind of look back at the offseason and the more I look back at how this team was built, Dansby Swanson is better than I thought of a signing. Like, I'm not sure if I agreed with the fans who said he was the fourth best in a four class shortstop class. But he's proving to be arguably the best in the group. And maybe long-term he is the best. So, and then there's that intangible that he brings some intangible aspects that I think can really help this team. And this is one of those moments where he may be needed, someone like Nico Horner may be needed, and just a kind of, you know, Trey Mancini's a veteran. He's been through a lot in life and in baseball. Maybe he doesn't need that pick-me-up, but if he does, that they have the right players to kind of do that. Honestly, I think the bigger thing is what is this a moment of another moment where they're downplaying an injury? I don't think they are, but I wasn't there. It's hard to know for sure. Blisters can be nothing. Blisters can linger for months. So we just don't know where that is right now.
Can I mention one thing? Yeah. So about Strowman.
Yeah,
so he mentioned I read that he said, I dealt with this one time before, 2018 maybe or something. And he said, I only missed two starts, or, you know, like, I'm okay. So nobody hold me to the exact words, because I may be, but that was the takeaway, and it was intended as a, so don't worry about it. I think I'll be fine for my next start. But being how we are, I read that and I was like, oh, well, the All-Star break is what, a couple starts away. It's not that hard to envision the Cubs being like, you know what, let's maybe let that really heal up. Because blisters, like you said, blisters can just be such a pain in the ass for the pitcher, because a lot of times you can pitch through it, but it's degrading your performance just ever so slightly.
Yes, I was.
I was
saying the exact same thing. Like, Trey Mancini, it's a nice moment or whatever. Like, it's a good quote, but like the thing coming out of London is, can Stroman pitch? How soon can Stroman pitch again? And can he pitch at the same level? And I don't even really know how to phrase some of the Cubs' medical updates of recent vintage, because I know there's a lot of gray areas with stuff that they're dealing with, but some of it is just unnecessarily obtuse. Like, say, a Suzuki's, whatever that was, he said he still had bad dreams or something like that, still something really. but never downplay an injury is something I learned pretty early in my journalism career, and that is not being sensationalistic. It's just taking into account that organizations always underplay the seriousness of this, and athletes always think they can come back way sooner than the timetables suggest. And so, like, you know, Stroman, as David Ross has said, has been this team's MVP, and taking him out at, you know, the latest, most important part of the season would be really damaging. I don't know how his starts would have lined up, but obviously there are four games in Milwaukee that are going to be really important. And we saw what happened when the Cubs went to Yankee Stadium last year. Like, they're going to need, and that was, I think, when Stroman at the last minute, like, informed the team he couldn't pitch. And that kind of set that whole sequence up of, like, Matt Schwarmer coming in and giving up whatever, 8 home runs or whatever it was.
Oh,
so,
God, I forgot about that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah, I got whiplash.
And, you know, the guy on the Yankees who watched that was Jameson Taillon, who was, you know, really, the rest of the rotation has been so good. And like Mancini, Taillon is a very accomplished, thoughtful, well-regarded player. But, like, he's going to have to start, you know, picking up some slack here if they're going to remain viable. Like, as good as Dansby Swanson has been, and there's been some nice moves around this team last offseason, like, he was their number one pitching target, and he's not been good at all the entire season.
Hey, can I make everyone feel even worse? Who's interested in that? Who wants that? Brown pitched yesterday. So he would have potentially been the guy you think, oh, you know, they need a fill-in for Stroman. He's on rest. He didn't finish the first inning. He got smoked, just did not have it, and got 2 outs and could not get out of the first. Now, to be clear, that has not been an issue for him this year. You know, it isn't like a, oh, boy, and he's really started to stink this year. No, he's been fantastic this year. That was a one-off, but boy... boy, did it make for just the worst timing, because the big league game happened, and I'm like, well, you know, Ben Brown's going to pitch. I can sort of console myself by thinking he's looking good. You know, hey, maybe this is an opportunity for him to get sometimes these injuries at the big league level, as long as you're not super worried about them long term, they do become nice opportunities to get a little injection, you know? And then that's what happened to Ben Brown, and I was like, oh boy, today is just miserable across the board. So I don't know what would happen if Stroman does have to ultimately hit the injured list, or if the Cubs deem that the best way to get hit to ensure that he fully heals up. But, you know, it would be interesting for Brown to come up and be tasked with making a fill-in start fresh off of 2/3 of an inning at Iowa.
Here's the slightest positive spin I can give you. If you want to line it up properly, the start would be against Cleveland and Milwaukee, the fill-in starts, right? Those aren't tough offensive teams. Those are bad offensive teams. Wisniewski should be able to handle those teams. If you want to give Ben Brown a debut, Cleveland is... I'm not sure how bad they are, but I think they're really bad offensively, Cleveland. But Milwaukee's no good. offensively either. These aren't good offensive teams. You're sandwiched between two other good offensive teams. I know the Yankees are. I'm pretty sure the Phillies are strong this year offensively. I could be wrong on that.
They're bouncing back a lot because Trey Turner has finally started hitting a lot.
Right, right. So I think, if you wanted to spin it, you can try and get those two missed starts in there because that's three against Cleveland and then four against Milwaukee. So that would make that you could finagle it right now to get the Wisniewski starts against those weaker offensive clubs.
How many lefties do they have?
Yeah, that's real, good. Yeah. I didn't take the time to look up their splits against righties and lefties if they're really strong there. But ultimately, I think Patrick's point stands out to me. That New York series just feels like a nice measuring stick. We've talked about measuring sticks early in the season when they went to LA and won 2 of 3. That felt like, are the Cubs legit? Now we're in June, July. We're hitting July. Enter the All-Star break. I thought about that series last year as well. I remembered the Giancarlo Stanton home run that I don't think I've ever seen a ball hit that hard. Maybe because I think it was like the second hardest ball of the StatCast era at the time. So those moments stand out as like this team is not anywhere close to anything respectable. At that time, it was embarrassing. I don't think David Ross was not happy. David Ross was furious about how embarrassing those losses were. I think maybe the last game was close. It was like a one-run game, well-pitched.
All I remember is Frank Schwindel setting StatCast records for the slowest pitch ever to have a home run hit off it. That was in that series.
It was an embarrassing series. It felt like the lowest point of this current rebuild. And I feel like they can build up to something if they can stay relevant, get over 500 over the next, 10, 13 games? And then you have 10 games, sorry. 10 games and then 3 in New York. If you can get to New York at or above 500 and make a statement there, that'd be really nice going into the All-Star break, right? Wouldn't that be the moment for what we can talk about this now, but Tom Ricketts talked about buying, and I think that's where we all want to start talking about these things. What holes do they need to fill? Where do they need to go shopping? Who are the guys that are available? It's been a while since we've talked about that because even in 2020 it wasn't really something that you could talk about because the trade deadline just felt weird, right? It wasn't normal. Nothing was really happening. I think they still did trade for Andrew Chafin.
That was when they got Chafin, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But my point is those things are fun to talk about, right? Selling is just like, here we go again. And we know who would be on the block and we may have to come to that again. But right now it's inching ever closer to that. And you want to circle that Yankees series and say, this team is competitive now. This team can bang with the big boys. Let's see them do it against the Yankees. And they need to get to and above 500, I think, over these next, 10. What did I say? 10, 7, whatever it is, 10.
Well, you're right, Saad. It was last June at Yankee Stadium. There was a 2-1 walk-off loss, and then they lost 8-0. And then 18-4 on getaway day. And so I think see is
the Cubs lost badly on a getaway day. Yeah. Get out of here. They never do that.
It was, I think you are seeing some interesting pressure points around Jed Hoyer when, Crane Kenny goes on the score and says, hey, we're launching a streaming service sometime after the All-Star break. And it's sometime after the All-Star break, the trade deadline. So I think there will be a lot of, as much as they try to separate church and state or whatever phrase you want to use, whatever firewalls are between those two sides, their offices are in the same building and they have to coexist and they're not always in total alignment. And I do think that part of this is the eye test that Sahadev is talking about. Like, okay, if you can go into New York and, you know, play well and compete against the Yankees, that's a really important, like, snapshot heading into the All-Star break. And, of course, that's also relative to the rest of the division. I'd imagine the Reds are going to slow down here. The Cubs can't have one of their awful Milwaukee trips the way they did in 2021, when that cemented in Jed Hoyer's mind the idea that he had to sell. And so, yeah, if they're at or slightly above 500, that's a really easy call to not sell, which means to add. And I think there'll be a lot of support in the highest levels of the organization to see it through. And, you know, I don't think any of us thinks Jed Hoyer is going to suddenly bestow a contract extension upon Marcus Stroman, even if that blister didn't happen. There's nothing in his history to suggest that Jed Hoyer is going to all of a sudden engage Marcus Stroman in a kind of last-minute contract dance. But it's not for nothing if you keep him around. Like, that's like 2 months of valuable, meaningful baseball games at Wrigley Field. That's a huge benefit for the Cubs as a baseball operation and a business entity.
And to that point, and I'll wrap it here, I want to add that, you know, anything that Crane Kenny or Tom Ricketts would say about the competitiveness of this team at midseason, you do have to regard it with a reminder that they are incentivized to remind fans that this team is competitive. This team is still going to be in it. We're not going to sell off. And so you do have to understand that, and I do. However, I did think it was notable that the manner in which Tom Ricketts discussed that his expectation was that the team would be buying was certainly more, it was more confident than I would have expected. There was no hedging. There was no, the only hedge he offered was things would really have to go off the rails from here for the Cubs not to be buying. That's what he said. Now, it's not his decision. But like you said, I think it was you, Mooney, that just said that that felt like a bit of a nudge to the front office of, like, you know, hey, it was never a question that ownership and the business side wanted this team to be competitive this year. Like, there are, it is not hard to make that argument that you see attendance starting to decline, Marquee's ratings maybe not so great, the launch of the streaming service this year. They wanted a competitive team this year.
And that were off the rails like 2+ weeks ago. So I think, like,
I mean, yeah, like, that is
the nosedive is totally a possibility.
And
yeah.
And by the way, I don't think it actually has to go off the rails for them to sell. I think it just has to maybe not continue at the level we've been seeing. And so I think you do have to keep that in mind. However, I think anybody who wanted to take away from that, that, like, the confirmation of something we've been saying, that the baseline right now, the version that they want to talk themselves into is buying. That is what they're hoping. That is where they see it today. You know, if the trade deadline was tomorrow, they're buying. They're looking for a lefty power bat. They're looking clearly for some supplementation at first base and some bullpen help. That, like, that's happening right now. If there is, so this is where it needs to be in a few weeks. And I think you guys have set it up fantastically that analysis is going to take place at the All-Star break, not the least of which because you'll have seen them play, you know, at Milwaukee, seen the measuring stick against the Yankees, and then also the draft will have taken place. And that's when the front office can really start turning its sights on, okay, what are we going to do at the deadline? And that's when I think some firmer decisions are going to be made. I know Jed said something to the effect of, you know, we don't have to decide until August 1st, and certainly you do want that as much information as you can get, but realistically, they're going to have to be making plans. They're going to have to be moving thoughtfully toward one direction or the other by the time they come out of the draft, which coincides with the All-Star break. So that's where we'll leave things for now. Cubs are off today. It's Monday, and they will then host the Phillies this week at Wrigley Field, and we'll be back at you on Thursday. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic on to Waveland. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. We appreciate you as always. Take care, have a great week, and talk to you soon.